Damn those sexy movies!
Welcome to the Silver Nitrate Witches Movie Review Brew. We're here to explore the way we review movies. From experienced critics to posts from casual viewers, we want to talk about how we talk about movies, how that's changed over time, what directions we see it going in, and more. We are your Silver Nitrate Witches. I'm Isabel Lang. I'm a writer, editor, and tarot reader.
And I'm Laura Valenza. I'm the co-film editor at the Brooklyn Rail. We now get to the moment that you have been waiting for.
The bad guy?
The bad guy!
The bad guy! I keep wanting to call him William H. Macy, but I know that's not his name.
William H. Mooring.
There we go. Maybe whenever you make the movie of the making of Salt of the Earth, William H. Macy can play William H. Mooring.
There we go. Perfect.
Perfect.
Okay. The middle-aged British guy who converted to Catholicism as an adult.
Oh, wow.
Well, we're done with this section.
I'm just saying that doesn't have to be bad. I know he makes the combination of things bad, but wow.
Before we get to Mooring's specific views on Salt of the Earth, I wanted to give context about who he was.
I would just like to point out, listeners, that in that sentence, Laura paused on the word context and looked right into the camera. Like, it just felt like such a moment. I don't know if you couldn't see yourself, but you were like, I just want to give context. It just felt very important. Anyway, continue.
Yeah.
Give us the context.
The reason, I know this was like a really long preamble. Only like 2 hours to get to William H. Mooring. But I did want to give, like, I mean, this is one reviewer writing for one Catholic newspaper.
Oh, God.
That still exists and is very Trumpy these days. And so we're getting to the very niche part of this story. So I wanted to make sure that we did actually kind of have like a, what is the whole national scope of the conversation going on, and not this one guy who's just like, I hate it.
I don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. Something that's really interesting, though, is that Mooring, he wrote for The Tidings. He was their motion picture editor. He had a regular column. He was real out to get allegedly communist movies. I mean, he, like, drank the McCarthy Kool-Aid and was thriving on it. So, you know, he's got, like, an article, and all of these articles, too, that I'm citing from are all from 1954 when Salt of the Earth comes out. So, like, he's just really writing a lot about those communist movies. Yeah, so this one is called...
Was he writing about several communist movies, or was he just really harping on Salt of the Earth?
No, we're starting with the communist movies that aren't Salt of the Earth.
Oh, okay.
And then we're gonna get to the Salt of the Earth.
I just wanted to get a better idea of, like, if he was just railing on this particular movie for some weird reason, or if he was just, like, generally, like, fuck the communist movies. But, alright, continue.
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes.
Okay, so, Movie Me Talk Down Anti-Red Films. So Mooring writes...
Wait, what?
I don't know. I have no idea, honestly.
That's the headline?
Some of these headlines... Did I read you the headline that was, like, Salt, Pinko Film, critics say, threats made?
No, you did.
Oh, well, that was one of the headlines. Some of these headlines, I don't know.
I mean, it's real interesting how creative they get with the limited amount of characters they have. Okay, so do me a favor, do the headline one more time, and I'm really going to try to figure out what the fuck he's saying.
Movie Me, quote, talk down, quote, anti-red films.
Okay, so like Movie Me, I guess, is a movie publication?
I have a typo and I should double check.
It sounds like it's like a publication, and they have talked down the film. I'm guessing. I don't know. Let's read the article and see if we can get any better context.
Well, let's read this. By the way, if anybody out there is looking to play a drinking game, take a shot every time this man says Nunnally Johnson. Which also is just the greatest name I've ever heard. All right, continuing. Movie people usually boast about their hits and clam up about their flops. This I find easy to understand. It is not easy to understand why, on the few occasions that Hollywood studio people have talked down their own films, these have been the kind the communists do not like. Nor is it easy to fathom why some publications, usually given to boosting films in such instances, have played up box office failures. The latest, there are so many like weird negatives in this. I actually have a really hard time following what he's even saying.
He's talking in a bit of a circle, but okay. Yeah.
The latest instance concerns Night People, an exciting, suspenseful, and thoroughly entertaining movie about a battle of wits between American army officers and Russians who kidnapped a GI as a hostage in Berlin. It is in CinemaScope and Technicolor. It has Gregory Peck, ooh, Broderick Crawford, and other powerful ticket-selling personalities in its cast. New section, returning a profit. Yet, Nunnally Johnson... shot one, who wrote and directed it, in an interview with Daily Variety, expresses disappointment over its public reception. He is quoted as saying, "I guess people want escapist entertainment. They don't want to hear anything about the political situation that stares them in the face. I suppose the answer is religious films with a message of solace and hope for the future. I don't even want to hear of a picture again that has anything to do with communism." Officials of 20th Century Fox, on the other hand, tell me that Night People, which hasn't yet finished playing, while smashing few records, is doing well enough to return a substantial profit. Nunnally Johnson does not offer any theory as to why Gregory Peck, who supposedly drew millions to the box office to see an anti-Nazi film called Gentleman's Agreement, suddenly loses his spell when he stars in Night People, an anti-communist one. Nor why fans who supposedly flocked to see Broderick Crawford in the subtly pro-leftist Born Yesterday gave him the cold shoulder in Night People, an equally subtle and much more significant expose of Soviet tactics. Nobody in Hollywood that I can recall ever said the public wouldn't go for drama with political undertones when we were getting anti-Nazi pictures at the sickening rate of 2 a week. How come Nunnally Johnson is so ready to concede that because Night People happens not to have burst the box offices, there is proof that the public will not face the political situation of the day? I don't think I've ever read a story with so many negative constructed sentences.
Yeah.
It's like he's trying to make it hard to actually understand what he's actually
saying. Welcome to Catholicism.
Yeah. New subsection. Marx before Hitler.
Okay.
Actually, the one weakness I perceived in Night People was that it hesitated to distinguish between Nazism and communism, but rather slyly blamed the Hitler regime for patterns of crime now followed by the commies. I always thought Karl Marx was dead and buried long before any of us heard of Hitler. Certainly the Soviet Union, with its insidious common form and common turn, had begun its attack upon Western ideals before the little paper hanger and his brown shirts took over Germany. This coupling of Nazism and communism noticed in other Hollywood movies has become a sort of habit, so I wouldn't say it ruined Night People, which I repeat, is quite a picture. I would, however, like to point out to Nunnally Johnson that the same talking down he now gives his film was given to Leo McCarey's anti-communist picture My Son John by some big studio big shots and employees. John wasn't any dramatic masterpiece because its star, Robert Walker, died suddenly before it was completed, and McCarey had to re-edit his picture the best way he could. But it wasn't entirely a failure, or it could not have created the controversy it did. New subsection. Other flops. Some responsible executives inside Warner's didn't exactly... Another drinking game should be every time he uses not. Oh, didn't exactly talk up their company's film, The Miracle of Fatima, either. The price charged to theater owners discouraged many from booking it. And those who booked it on Warner's terms had to raise their admission prices, which kept a tidy number of people away. Nothing was said about it, but people who should have been loyal to Warner's openly, and in my opinion, disloyally, emphasized that Fatima, in some parts, was a flop. I'd like to suggest to Nunnally Johnson and others in his frame of mind that they wait until the final results are in. My bet is that these will show more profit than many of the anti-Nazi films Hollywood turned out. And I'd like to suggest to Daily Variety, which thought well enough of the pro-communist propaganda film Salt of the Earth to accept advertising for it, that they print the facts about the public reaction to that film. We then might easily see that if the American public doesn't take enthusiastically to anti-communist movies, it has much less enthusiasm for pro-communist ones. I like literally can't even follow his logic. I mean, I don't know how well you're following this. I mean, I'm getting the gist of it, but
I keep getting really lost.
That's what I mean by, like, the negative construction. Like, I feel like he's using these weird grammatical structures so that it's actually hard to understand what he's really trying
right,
to
like,
say.
Right, like, it doesn't feel like he's coming to a point at all, except, isn't it funny sometimes people like movies and sometimes we don't?
Yeah. He publishes a letter he received from James Wong Howe, who actually, this guy should be another podcast episode. He's fascinating. He was a Chinese-American cinematographer who won an Academy Award in 1958 for The Old Man and the Sea, and just had a fascinating career, and also had to put up with, like, a lot of racist shit in Hollywood, and really interesting person. So he dared to write Mr. Mooring. And he says, Mr. William H. Mooring's motion picture column of the February 5th, 1954 issue has recently been brought to my attention. In it, Mr. Mooring refers to me as a red fronter and states that I was in a commie front pressure group that tried to get American aid withdrawn from Chiang Kai-shek so that the Chinese communists could take over. This statement and its implications are simply not true, and I would appreciate your publishing this letter. As for Go Man Go, which I directed, a picture about the rise to fame of the Harlem Globetrotters, I consider that this very American success story emphasizes the lessons of good sportsmanship and the opportunities which our country affords to members of all minority groups. Signed, James Wong Howe.
I kind of want to watch the movie about the Harlem Globetrotters.
I know, I kind of do too. Yeah, I don't have any comeback from Mr. Mooring for that one, but I thought we'd leave it on Howe's standing up to him. I think it's interesting, though, that, like, even though I was like, okay, this is, like, really, really niche, and this is this Catholic newspaper, clearly, like, you know, we have this cinematographer, this award-winning cinematographer, who actually feels the need to stand up for himself against this guy. So there must have been a certain amount of public sway that he held at the time.
Mooring?
Yeah. If this guy actually felt like, I need to correct what he's saying because he's publishing libel about me.
Yeah, and the fact that it was like, this article was brought to my attention also is pretty interesting. Can, totally random offshoot of this, can you, the Morris article, is it something you could send, like, share with me? Because I'm very curious about picking apart the language.
Yeah.
And also, I know, right? I just texted my mother because she loves the movie Born Yesterday. And I was like, somebody just called the movie Born Yesterday subtly leftist. And she was like, it's very leftist. What are you talking about? Because the main character calls somebody a fascist at some point. That's like a whole part of the movie.
Woo!
Anyway. And so now I'm curious about it. And now she wants to read it too.
Yeah, I'll actually find, because I save, like, all the actual, like, PDF scans of these articles, so I'll find it and send you, like, the actual
scan. I'm very
curious
about,
so, because I don't know if I have the whole article
I'm very
in
curious
here.
About finding a random sentence in there and just really trying to pick it apart and diagram it and figure out what the fuck he's saying.
I would really love to hear more about that, Belle. So, he has this really obnoxious article about, you know, the children in the Legion of Decency and which movies are objectionable or not, and children feeling like he keeps the cool movies away from them.
Keeps the cool movies away.
He also quotes, like, a survey of a large Catholic high school that revealed that 76% of the 1,200 students never consulted the Legion of Decency's movie ratings.
Yeah. Okay. Welcome to Catholic high schools. No one there gives a fuck about anything. Are you kidding me?
And he does actually reference Salt of the Earth in this article, too. He says, communists pull every wire to get a film like Salt of the Earth before the public. Film people complain that Catholics wince and whine while communists work and wangle. Can you do anything to prove it isn't so?
Did he actually say wangle, or is it wrangle, and it just kind of got caught up as you were reading?
I have wangle written, but now I feel like...
Because I really hope he said wangle.
I think he said wangle. I mean, that would be the alliteration. Oh my god. So I have a couple other highlights, just like kind of key quotes from some other articles he wrote. Again, this is all like in the months when Salt of the Earth is in the movie theaters. So in June of 1954, he says, code backers score with latest films. This is not to say there aren't some Hollywood producers who think movies can satisfy adult tastes only if they pander to minds that are culturally and morally immature. Such people are always with us.
Pander.
In an article from May of 1954 called Legion of Decency, No Amateur Outfit, he basically covers a magazine story that pitted a Catholic priest against a Protestant faith leader, in which the Protestants say that the Catholics are overzealous about listing objectionable movies and trying to ban films. The Legion of Decency, which, again, not to be confused with the American Legion, because we have two legions, both of them out to get the communists.
Or the Legion like the devil
pig.
Right,
that too. All right, we have another article called Filth Filters Through Film Advertising Code. He was as much against how movies were advertised as he was against, like, the movies themselves. And so he felt that there was a lot of...
Show him the ads for Thelma.
Yeah, there
movies.
Was a lot of indecency in movie ads. But he says he complains about, quote, the rubbish Howard Hughes used to advertise his Bible class star, semi-nude and in indecent posture as a threat to both our eyes in a fifth-rate burlesque called The French Line.
As opposed to a threat to just one of our eyes.
Yes.
It's only a threat to my left eye. My right eye's going to be okay.
It's enticing our better American film companies to pile on the suggestiveness. So, you know, he felt that we really shouldn't be using suggestiveness in movie ads.
What a word. How are you?
Damn those sexy movies!
There's our cold open for
today.
I
also want to point out that Howard Hughes is the person who offered advice on how to squash Salt of the Earth's distribution.
Oh my god. That's right.
Yeah. And Hughes actually comes back again in an article called Will Hughes Challenge Code's Constitutionality? Mooring writes, it appears plain to me that sooner or later someone in the Hollywood movie business or on the off-color fringes of it will take legal action involving a challenge of the constitutionality of the American movie industry's self-regulatory code of ethics and morals. So this is still a Hays Code era. Mm-hmm. Naturally, it will have to be someone who has neither interest in nor respect for the Christian and traditional standards of movie morality, which the code derives from the Ten Commandments. Marxian communists will be delighted if this code can be upset, because the communist plan depends upon the weakening of our nation by subversion of its morals. The power of the movies to accelerate this process is not underrated by the enemies of our country and of Christianity. The Hollywood Reporter, reliable movie trade daily, reports that Howard Hughes is contemplating legal action against the Motion Picture Association of America, under which the movie code is operated. Claim for damages amounting to $10 million is mentioned.
How dramatic.
So, Belle, if you were wondering what the problem was with communism in the 1950s, it's that it's going to ruin our Christian country and our morals, and it will hurt the children.
I'm reminded, this is so fascinating. My friend India was over yesterday, and we were watching, listening to Epic, the musical, and because it's about Greek mythology, we were talking about mythology and religion, and she was talking about, she quoted her favorite philosopher, Nietzsche, after whom one of her dogs is named.
Wait, she has more than one dog now?
She has more than one dog. They have a puppy. Its name is Juana. She's very cute, and she farts like a menace. Yeah. anyway. apparently, Nietzsche said something like we create religions to protect our values.
I'm sorry, when you said that, I was picturing her dog saying
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, me too. The whole time we were having this conversation, I was picturing the dog saying it. But yeah, he said, we create religion to protect our values. He was largely talking about Christianity, and now it's like, you could, that very easily translates to, like, we create capitalism to protect these values, or, like, capitalism clings to religion to protect the values, or capitalism sells values to the religion.
Unless the communists have money, then it's all good. Well, and to that point, too, he has a whole other article about the code and the Ten Commandments. And
Oh, shit.
Code doesn't kill drama realism. I'm going to spare you from that one. I mean,
actually, can you send me that one? I'm so curious.
Sure.
As a person who had to memorize the Ten Commandments as, like, a 9-year-old child, I'm so curious.
He's got another article about art and morality and communism and foreign, read Italian, film. Not super relevant here, but just goes to show that he's just really on a communism in the movies kick.
Do you think he seems like the kind of person who would say Italian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain to somebody in high school, don't say Italian. And they were like, why? And then they just kept saying it, Italian, Italian. I was like, okay.
Because I'm not going to be friends with you anymore if you keep saying it. Let's just leave it at that.
So, this is my favorite thing that okay. I read by him. Okay. This is Moring's 5-point plan to, quote, combat immoral movies and indecent advertising.
Only 5 number points.
Number one.
Okay, I'm ready. Number one.
To set up student film action groups and encourage study of movie appreciation in the schools. Okay. He wants a very specific type of movie appreciation.
Yeah. I was like, I don't think that's going to get the outcome you're hoping for.
And he has a whole article about that.
About the specific type of movie appreciation?
About teaching movie appreciation in schools the right way.
I see. The Ten Commandments is going to be the top of their curriculum. Later in the early 2000s, The Passion of the Christ is added.
Number two, to warn all theater owners on a local basis when a seriously offensive film is about to be released. Offensive to whom?
Well, I'm sure he's got specific explanations for what qualifies as offensive.
Well, it's not like how we assume that all theater owners on a local basis are Catholics, because he says to reiterate their obligation as Catholics to stay away from altogether. From theaters showing, this is to the audiences, to reiterate their obligation as Catholics to stay away altogether from theaters showing condemned films with deliberate forethought.
Deliberate forethought. I was going to say, you know, he probably assumes that all, you know, righteous American theater owners are Catholic.
Probably. Three, to inform their members and affiliates when bad movies are on the way. Also keep them posted.
That sounds exactly like number two.
Also keep them posted when a particularly commendable film is going into release. This guy's not a good writer, okay? He's not a good writer. Number four, to appeal to all newspapers, TV, and radio stations not to publicize approvingly films and passed by... Oh, not to publicize... I think I have a typo here. Not passed by the movie code, people, and the Legion of Decency. And five, whatever happened, separation of church and state. Five, to set up liaison between these student bodies and other religious and civic organizations whose interest in preserving decency and morality and entertainment indicates a basis for cooperative action. These youngsters mean business. The modern American revolt against Puritanism has not passed them by. They are not Puritans, but neither are they pagans.
Step five, indoctrinate the youth.
Yeah. Yeah. So I also have just a... Well, this is a side note, so we don't have to go into detail, but I did find an article that explains just how the Legion of Decency categorizes movies.
I do. Oh, okay, I'm fascinated. Can we also just take a moment? We've said Legion of Decency so many times, and it's just now processing how kind of badass of a name that is. That sounds like
Can we have, like, a Legion of Indecency? That sounds more fun, though.
That sounds fun. Okay, also related, I was going to say, the Legion of Decency sounds like the, like, big bad guy in some kind of video game. And then the Legion of Indecency sounds like the, like, big bad guy in, like, a children's cartoon. Like, Doofenshmirtz Evil Incorporated is part of the legal of indecency. Sorry, did you ever watch Phineas and Ferb?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that our conversation about an obscure independent film from the 1950s trying to do the right thing, that we managed to get in a Phineas and Ferb reference.
Doofenshmirtz Evil Incorporated. After Hours. That's been stuck in my head for days.
The one thing I will tell you about Legion of Decency classifications is I'll just give you the different categories they put movies into. So we have morally unobjectionable for everyone.
Okay, G.
Morally unobjectionable for adults.
PG-13.
Morally objectionable in part for everyone. Condemned movies!
NC-17!
And then we also have...
Triple X!
We have a side note for separately classified.
Oh, okay.
Which they put only one movie in that category, and it was some religious movie that they felt that was about Martin Luther, who started the Protestant Reformation, and they felt that there were historical interpretations unacceptable to Catholics. And that they just had to categorize this separately.
Because it's the Protestants, that's the historical issue. So they're like, no, we can't watch that movie, it's got Protestants.
So we just went through all of those stories and we haven't even gotten to the articles he wrote specifically about Salt of the Earth.
How, I would like to guess how many you have found by him about Salt of the Earth.
Okay, I don't know if it's actually as impressive as you might think.
No, I'm curious though, is it more or less than 10?
No, I only ended up pulling out 3.
That's still a lot, considering that one about the Gregory Peck, the Night People, wasn't even really all that much about Night People. It was just like a segue into trashing the industry more generally. It is fascinating that like Salt of the Earth is the hill he decided to die on.
Yep. He was feeling salty about this movie.
Salty. For some reason, also, when you were reading the other one, every time you said Night People, for some reason, my brain kept, like, processing it as Cat People.
Oh my god.
Which I know you've also seen recently. I was like, I'd love to see what this guy thought about Cat People.
Oh boy.
If you've never seen Cat People, dear listeners, I would say definitely do it, but also, what I was too late to warn Laura was, it is not a movie you should watch with your parents.
Well, I also watched it with my brother and his girlfriend.
Right. I think it's a fine movie to watch with Nat. It's funny, but it's not a movie I would watch with my father.
The girlfriend and I were the only ones who actually made it to the end, and we decided we loved it.
Right. I like the ending, but also, yes, I wouldn't watch it with your parents, and that is no longer what the Audubon Zoo in New Orleans looks like. So
that's good to know, because that did make me sad, actually.
It's very sad. Anyway, all right, let's hear his complaints about Salt of the Earth.
All right, article number one, Red Influence Pushes Salt Film. Salt of the Earth, a rabble-rousing film produced in New Mexico by ousted Hollywood communists and fellow travelers, financed by a union expelled for being under Red domination, has now been condemned by the AFL Central Labor Committee as non-union, anti-American, and produced principally by persons identified either as communist or pro-communist. Again, a lot of empty language here.
It's interesting, though, that, like, the language of non-union is fascinating because, like, very technically, like, they could not end up working with a union, and it was just a bunch of, like, kind of odds and ends of people who made it.
Well, but they were all union members that they got. They were just... all
but they were at, in some way, they were just not a part of a single union. Yeah, so it's like very technically, no, it was not union, but like the phrase it that way makes it seem like it's almost anti-union in its...
Also, the movie was funded by a union.
Right, but like it's fascinating the way, again, just the way that you can spin things when you're and influence people in, you know, ways that are not necessarily reflective of the film's content or morals, much like Laura's excellent TED Talk on But I'm a Cheerleader, which I'm sure by this time we're posting is going to be available on various platforms for you to watch.
Woo! Oh, and there's also a shout out to Salt of the Earth in the TED Talk.
Yes! Okay. Yes. All right, so,
okay.
Continue.
To continue.
Well, let's keep going, William.
Still, it is proposed to give the film public release at a minor Hollywood theater, which reportedly has been leased by M&S Theater Corporation, with which Simon Lazarus, belligerent Fifth Amendment witness before the Un-American Activities Committee, is associated. Simon Lazarus, I think, was also, I think he ran the independent production company that produced Salt of the Earth.
Lazarus is also just a fucking killer name.
I know, it's really badass. Typically, impudent attempts have been made, and may be repeated, to lure people of influence to attend private previews of Salt of the Earth. Such attendance might help create a public impression that the picture is acceptable. Recently, many private showings of the film were given at a local TV station, where projectionists innocently or deliberately violated union rules in showing it. The Legion of Decency has not passed upon Salt of the Earth. Comment based on a viewing of this film will appear next week.
How is it a union violation?
I don't know. He doesn't, like so many of these articles, they don't really explain any of what
he doesn't mean. Have the receipts.
Yeah. The other thing that I would like to point out here, going back to Bieberman talking about how they actually had to arm themselves and guard the ranch where they were filming in order to protect themselves against violent vigilantes in the community. I mean, the reason why this stuff matters so much is that these people were just trying to make a movie, and they were bullied and received death threats for it. So, like, we're not just, you know, I mean, like, all of these articles against this movie are trying to position it as, like, you know, oh, we're just trying to let you know, like, this is not a great movie, it's morally objectionable. It's like, yeah, but you're actually giving people who are ignorant and hateful permission to act violently.
To continue to be ignorant and hateful.
Yeah.
To act violently, yeah.
You know, I think also to the point of, like, what does it mean it's like violate union rules? I don't know. The article doesn't bother explaining that. I mean, the other problem here is that, you know, there's a lot of, like, keeping people ignorant instead of actually educating people. And this is how we wind up in situations in which people feel that they have a right to be violent instead of we all have a right to live our own lives here. And I may be segueing into some present day issues.
Yeah, I'm like, this is how we find ourselves in other current situations.
All right, the next article I have for you is called...
All right.
This one is titled Class Hate Film.
He's so close to the point he's missing it. Like, he can't see the forest for the trees. Oh my god. So tell us what Morris thinks about class hatred.
The audacity of the communists who burrow their way through our social system and even some parts of the Constitution is by now pretty obvious.
This makes a lot of sense to, like, that's a very, I think, good example of, like, what the view of communism was at that time. But, like, because I was like, what does it mean, like, to be this in America, and, like, to actually be that and to be perceived as that? I am understanding now from your previous discussion are two different things, and I think that sentence alone is a good example of, like, the difference between the perception and the actual identity.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Occasionally, however, in process of boring, they raise an anthill some people immediately mistake for a mountain, while others don't even notice it at all. This film, Salt of the Earth, presents a good example. It is frankly designed as pro-communist, anti-American propaganda, filmed in New Mexico by a bunch of characters who truculently defied the Un-American Activities Committee. It represents a deliberate attempt to slap our country in the face and spit at the Hollywood movie industry, which fired them. Nevertheless, the film, financed through a trade union cited as communist-controlled, gets a public showing at least one New York theater. Having read the, quote, screenplay, quote, which appeared in the Hollywood Quarterly, that particular issue flooded our secular campuses. I view Salt of the Earth as a class-hate tract, naively contrived in terms that went out of date with Communist Party agitators at least 10 years ago. So much for the value of this film. I love how he tries to be like, you're not even cool communists anymore.
Oh my god. Can we take a brief pause to just address this, his opening metaphor of them, like, boring into the system and, like, digging through, and how he missed the perfect chance to make a metaphor about mining?
Yeah, but he went for anthills and mountains that some people see and some people don't.
There was the obvious metaphor of, like, you can make this work with the themes of the movie and, like, still a shitty opinion, but a much better writing, and it just went right over.
That should be another, that could be like our Patreon bonus episode. We're going to show you how to write a good bad review.
Yes. Anyway.
Okay.
We'll pick apart his sentences and then tell you all of the things he could have done instead.
The viciousness behind it is something else. Its very origin and the source to which any profit it may make will be returned should ensure that no loyal American theater owner will touch it. Factually not true. Showed at plenty of theaters. Those who do...
One for 6 weeks.
Yeah, those who do invite immediate and exhaustive investigation by the FBI. Perhaps, in a sense, the impudent attempt to get this picture before the American public will in this way boomerang against the friends of those whose gripes against our country led them to film it. I love this last part. I think is really interesting because basically, if you're wondering what's subversive about communism, anything that criticizes America is apparently subversive. So if you have any complaint against the United States, you are being subversive, which is actually really just censorship, because you're basically saying you have no free speech and you are not allowed to suggest that something could actually be done better. And again, we have this whole attempt to, instead of solving real problems like equality and running water and electricity, we're just gonna talk about how, like, no, you can't say anything bad, that's unpatriotic.
It's very weird to see that sort of thing now wrapped up in, like, Christian nationalism, because it's the same as saying, like, you can't say that, it's blasphemous. Like, it's so fucked.
I feel like too, this, I wish I knew more about logical fallacies, but I feel like there's a logical fallacy present in here by saying that anything you say against our country therefore means you are a subversive and a spy for the Soviet Union.
Oh, yeah. No, I think there surely is one. There surely is one. We used to teach that at Mississippi State. We had to give whole lessons on logical fallacies.
I was hoping you could, like, come through with the rhetoric lessons here.
Yeah. I'll find something.
I also think, too, like, this is also an example of really irresponsible journalism, because there's so much that he's presenting as fact that is actually just a totally hyperbolic opinion based on nothing. Like, the viciousness behind the movie, it's like, what proof do you have that these are vicious people? Where do you get that from? Or, you know, it's frankly designed as pro-communist, anti-American propaganda. I mean, he states that as if that is the undeniable fact, when it's like, actually, if you, like, interview all these people, they would argue that you're being the un-American person here.
The no true Scotsman fallacy is what you're looking for. You could literally just sub out American for Scotsman, and that's exactly what you're saying. Like, no true American would ever say these things.
All right, our final third most extensive article. Mooring writes, Salt of the Earth, a political tirade. I'm not sure what the political tirade is, the movie or what he's about to write.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, first of all, this is hilarious that this is the first one that says the full name of the movie and doesn't just call it Salt. And then secondly, another one that's like,
Or it doesn't call it anything. The last one was just class hate film.
Like class hate film, it's like, you're not wrong.
Oh, you know, I just realized this too because I was looking at the dates. The class hate film one came out in March, so I don't think it's possible that he could have seen the movie at this point. And he says having read the screenplay, which appeared in Hollywood Quarterly.
The screenplay.
Yeah, the screenplay. So I think this article is actually only based on the screenplay and not even having actually seen the movie.
So he really didn't fucking know anything. All right, tell us about the political tirade.
Here it is. On the witness stand, the Fifth Amendment got Michael Wilson's tongue. He declined to answer whether he is or ever was a communist. I would like to point out, the Fifth Amendment is a constitutional right of American citizens. So to say it's un-American to use your American constitutional...
That's another logical fallacy.
We're talking about logical fallacies.
Certainly another one.
The mooring fallacy. Let's just make them all the mooring fallacy.
Here we go.
After an invitational preview of his latest screenplay, Salt of the Earth, he was most anxious to answer questions. Of course, he was not under oath. Wilson admitted, however, that this film, a story about a strike among zinc miners in New Mexico, USA, is told from the miners' point of view and to that extent is biased. I like how he starts out with, he admitted. It's like, I don't...
That's just what the movie's about. Confessing. Yeah.
This is just the goal. To the experienced observer, bias is apparent. Yes, Maureen, your bias is very apparent. I felt that the answers to questions Michael Wilson, Paul Jericho, Herbert Biberman, and others involved in Salt of the Earth refused to answer before the Congressional Committee are positively to be found in the negative. The film negative, that is!
Did he really say that, or is that your adding?
No, he really wrote that.
Oh my god, I was already just laughing at the positive in the negative. And then you had to come back with the film. Okay.
Still, Michael Wilson seemed anxious to convince us that this picture represents fair comment on a case of social injustice. The problem, I don't think he was anxious to convince you. I think that's just
what the movie's about.
What the movie's about. The problem described, he said, is factual. Only the personal element represents dramatization. He didn't trouble to point out that it is just this personal element that gives the movie its anti-American, pro-communist slant. The behavior of American characters and the conclusion drawn therefrom make Salt of the Earth precisely what it is. A political tirade against alleged victimization of minors by American employers. They're American miners.
Yeah, it's like everybody in the movie is American. Everybody is American.
Aided by American sheriffs who behave like brutes and thugs.
They didn't even want to beat him up, though.
Yes. The strike occurred years ago. That's not true. It was like within like a few years of the making of this movie. Yet props cunningly set it in the present. It was roughly in the present. The film reflects identifiable Soviet techniques, outdated in many respects, but quite obvious all the same. Does he explain that? No. No, he does not. Subsection.
Oh, God.
Follows communist policy. Salt of the Earth, financed partly by the International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers, as written by Wilson, produced by Jericho, and directed by Biberman, lays some pretensions to realism through stark black-and-white photography, authentic backgrounds of poor miners' homes, and the profuse use of close-ups in contrast with violent scenes of mass protests. I actually feel that that's, you know, yeah, a nice description of how they made the movie.
There was one word in there, alleged or something. There was one word in there that I didn't like, but otherwise.
It lays some pretensions to realism.
Pretensions, that's it. Yeah, pretensions to realism. But other than that, yeah, no, that's what the movie does.
But Belle,
this is just the way Russian political films aimed to stimulate mob psychology 25 to 30 years ago. This doesn't necessarily mean, as one New York critic pointed out, that Salt of the Earth is old-fashioned. We must remember that communist policy in the USA today approximates society policy, I thought that was supposed to be Soviet policy, in the late 20s when the Russian communists were still in the early stages of Marxian experiment, as American communists theoretically are today. So I suppose if we let people make movies like Salt of the Earth where people want running water, then we're going to turn into the USSR. In Salt of the Earth, just one or two professional actors are used. All the others are real minors. This follows a technique fathered by Pudovkin, granddaddy of the Soviet propaganda film.
He did not say granddaddy.
Oh, yes, he did, and it's hyphenated.
Granddaddy.
Granddaddy.
Of the propaganda. Oh, Jesus.
And now I'm just thinking of Love Actually when they're like the bad granddad of rock and roll. Bill Nye's character.
I always forget every Christmas when I start listening to my Christmas music, I forget that that song is on my Christmas playlist. And it'll start with just the music. And I'm like, what is this? I don't recognize this. And then it just, I feel it in my fingers. Comes out.
Oh my god.
And I just cackle for a few minutes. Anyway, okay, the granddaddy of propaganda, not Billy Mack.
So I apologize actually to Mooring. I said that he does not explain what these Soviet techniques are, and he does. He does actually explain the Soviet techniques. So here's our final.
Because he's such an expert on Soviet techniques.
Why are you watching all these Soviet movies, Mooring?
Yeah, Mooring.
Final technique he identifies, in Salt of the Earth, one sequence cuts back and forth between a peaceful Mexican strike leader who is being brutally beaten up by American sheriffs. Okay, again, he's also American. His heritage is Mexican.
Mexican-American. Yes.
But he's beaten up by American sheriffs and his wife, who is in the throes of labor. This corresponds to a typical Soviet technique in screen symbolism. The woman endures the cruelties of nature, the man the barbarism of the social system. That's actually like one of the most brilliant scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
I thought it was really good. It made me think a lot of the last episode of the first season of House of the Dragon, spoiler if you're catching up on those things, sorry. There's like a very similar moment, and it was like my favorite moment of the whole series, where like the husband character is out like conquering something and riding around in his dragon and being a badass and like kicking ass and taking names. He's not doing that. He and his advisors are in the war room planning the war. And so it's actually a very calm scene, but they're sitting there like plotting all of these war crimes, basically, while she, like, who is supposed to be the ruler, that's the whole point of these wars, is that she wants the throne, and they're like, you can't have it because you're a lady, and so, like, she's left out of these conversations because she's giving birth. And anyway, I remember watching this and going, like, oh my god, it's like that bit in House of the Dragon, this is so amazing, and I thought it was so good, and I'm like, I wonder if they were inspired by this or something, and it's such a good scene.
That would be interesting. Okay, subsection. Religion gets red treatment. Religion gets identifiably communist treatment also. This Mexican wife, okay, again.
Also American. Well, the actress is Mexican, but.
The actress is Mexican, but the characters are all Americans who have Mexican heritage. This Mexican wife, well played by Rosaura Revuelta, he complimented the movie. Is first seen as a devout Catholic who resists Union agitation and often takes her problems to Our Lady of Guadalupe in prayer. Once she
Catholicism has nothing to do with unions. Like, she's still a good Catholic, even though she starts protesting for the Union. Oh my god. Okay, keep going.
Once she becomes, and this is in quotes, emancipated.
I'm sorry. Jesus would have been right there with him. That's all I'm saying.
And joins the other wives in the picket lines. Her religion goes behind her. That's not true. Like, there's a whole baptism scene. Anyway, This Marxian method in character progression is supposed to suggest that freedom is the new faith, and freedom is to be won not by Christian communal service, but by communist revolt. I also have to say, like, even if you can make the argument that that symbolism is happening in this movie, so...
Yeah, so?
I'm like, there's a lot of problems with Catholicism. Is that so bad to, like, leave it in the past?
Laura, don't let him hear you say that. He's gonna call the granddaddy on you.
The granddaddy in the sky?
The granddaddy of rock. Billy Mack's just gonna come up from behind your chair. What'd you say about Catholicism?
Oh my god.
Several blunders Pudovkin would have avoided occur in Salt of the Earth.
I'm sorry, you have to stop. When you started reading it with that voice, in my brain I just heard Bobby Newport.
Oh, I think that is where I got this voice from. I wish I could do it in a British accent.
Okay, it's out of my system.
Bobby Newport.
Oh my god, okay. Okay. All right, I'm listening now.
A Mexican miner.
Oh, God.
Don't even have to say it. Juan Chacon, who, as a union leader, sustains the central interest, cannot provide bread for his hungry children. But he's seen drying himself on a towel cannons might be proud of, and his shirt simply shout out $17.50. I don't even really know what to...
Okay, first of all...
I mean, I don't even know how to begin to fact check that, but I'm right. Also kind of like, I think people could starve and have towels.
Right, yeah, like, and like, even, okay, there's no way, like, canonically in the story, that shirt was $17.50. Obviously not. Like,
no, I don't think so. Not.
Even if it was, like, okay, sure. So, like, he bought that shirt, like, 2 years ago.
It's a movie... They're actors in costume. I mean, like, I
like he needs to wear a shirt. If he wasn't wearing a shirt, you'd be complaining that he was shirtless.
And also, it actually says in the movie that Ramon is, I think he's like, because there's that whole point where they're trying to like divvy up rations and stuff, and they say that like Ramon's family is not doing as badly as some of the other families.
Right, they're not in as dire need. Yeah, so they don't get a large enough ration.
Michael Wilson's dialogue defeats conviction. He has his simple, presumably semi-literate characters. Ooh.
What? What?
That's what? That's a weighted presumably right there. Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
This is gonna get worse. I'm just... Alright. Oh, he has his simple, presumably semi-literate characters... Using slogans like, we demand sanitation, not discrimination. So,
yeah.
Yeah, their dialogue suggests they might logically have escaped their drab environment with its alleged inequalities to take their places in the professions. Perhaps editing Webster or compiling lexicons for college professors.
I'm sorry, is he saying that he made them too smart? Because they're just dumb Mexicans?
Because they know the word sanitation and discrimination. Yeah. It's like, of course they know the word discrimination.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They live it. They live it every day.
Oh, God.
Well, maybe he's just jealous, because clearly he's a shit writer.
Yeah, well, there you go. He's like, sanitation, not discrimination. That's good. Write that down.
One family is shown leaving. The soundtrack mournfully tells us their brothers and sisters in the movement never heard of them again. Did they, one wonders, settle perchance in Beverly Hills, where Red, still write on lucrative terms, subtly slanted screenplays under assumed names?
No, I think they just probably went to another fucking town in New Mexico and another mine job.
Yeah, I love that. Is like... Such a stretch to get in a dig at, like, Hollywood's full of communists. I'm sorry, but I just don't think it's possible to truly be an artist and not be liberal. Like, you have to necessarily be open-minded to be a true artist.
There is a great bit in another podcast that I love. It's called Someplace Underneath.
Ooh, I like the title.
If y'all are listening, I would love to collab. It's a great title. It's a great podcast. Where in one episode, I don't remember the context of the episode, but they were talking about this same thing where somebody asked one of them, like, why aren't there more conservative artists? And it's like, yeah. Why the fuck do you think? Like, you have to have a willingness to, like, see the world in a new and different way to be able to create art, which you cannot do if you really believe that bullshit. And so it's either just, like, not possible or it gets squashed down at a young age and then you're just never, you know, more of the gifts that we have not been able to open, as you said.
Yeah.
The gifts we have to leave unopened, as you said before.
I think, too, this also, like, dovetails into, you know, the alleged liberal indoctrination that happens on college campuses. It's like there's no liberal indoctrination happening in college campuses. But when you go...
No, it's happening in kindergarten these days. Didn't you hear?
Sorry, I missed that. Missed that news alert.
They took away nap time for indoctrination hour. Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
Well, don't worry, conservatives. I still take my nap time.
Okay, so continue on college
campuses. Yeah, but, like, you know, of course, when you're, you know, in a place that's dedicated to learning, you have to essentially be open-minded. You're going to study different cultures and different ideas than what you grew up in. And you're also in an international space where you're going to meet people from all different walks of life than what you grew up in. And so naturally, there's going to be more liberal tendencies on a college campus, and that's not indoctrination. It's just the fact of what happens when you actually open your mind to learning and creativity, two things that could bring some of the most joy in your life.
To kind of paraphrase Morris back to himself, that's like leaving behind faith for freedom.
Belle, we're about to get your favorite phrase again.
College also requires research.
Right.
And, like, evidence.
Exactly.
Which is, and so.
Rhetoric and there, logical.
Just to throw that out there.
Knowing how to avoid logical fallacies. Yeah. And I'm sorry, but conservative thought doesn't hold up against any of this. It just
no. Oh, doesn't. My God. There was a whole education committee meeting a few days ago in Louisiana because
they need the Ten Commandments in the classroom.
No, something weirdly, not more stupid, but just as stupid. Policymakers are like, why are we losing all of our top performing students? Why are they all going out of state? Why are all of our top performing students going to Alabama instead of LSU? Where the top performing students, like high school students of Louisiana, are attending college. And it's like, 80% or something are, like, staying in the state, and, like, between, like, 35 and 40, I don't remember the exact number, are attending LSU properly in Baton Rouge, and a handful of others are attending LSU campuses across the state. So it's, like, we're not really losing top students to Alabama, and that's, like, what the research says. And then the policymaker's like, well, she said, I don't know what your research says. All I know is what I see from my front porch.
Oh my God, can she also see Russia?
Can she see Russia? But they were all like, well, I know so-and-so's kid and somebody's grandchildren and somebody's niece. They all went to Alabama, so...
Oh my God, the people who run this school are just basing everything on anecdotal evidence.
It's not even the school, Laura. That's like policymakers at the state level. Like, it's like people at LSU aren't even concerned about that.
You know what? Actually, Bill, I think they're right. Clearly, Louisiana is losing its top students, or a bunch of idiots wouldn't be running the education system.
But, okay. All right. So, you were gearing up to read what was next, and you started to sigh and say my name, which I think means I'm gonna hate it. Am I right?
Oh, I was gonna say that your favorite phrase is coming up again.
Nunnally Jones?
In most? No. No.
Okay.
No Nunnally Jones in this one. In most other respects, this Salt of the Earth compares fairly well with any of the rabble-rousing movies the USSR turned out a quarter of a century ago. I love the insistence that it's like, it's also outdated. You're not even cool, Salt of the Earth.
You're not even cool communists. Mm.
that these men who made it were preoccupied with their message, which is in quotes, so failed to remember that little things which bespeak truth in a motion picture carry more conviction than any big lie, which is capitalized Donald Trump style, is easy to understand.
Where's the big lie?
Well, maybe he's going to explain that to us. This film is the first of its kind made in the U.S., and if every real American theater owner... Oh, I see. He only meant we have to warn the real American theater owners in his 5 points.
Oh, yeah. The fake American theater owners are on their own.
Yeah, they're fake news theaters.
Yeah. The fake John Muir isn't allowed.
Yeah.
Just the real fake John Muir.
If every real American theater owner treats it with the same silent contempt its originators showed before the Un-American Activities Committee, it may very well be the last. One cannot imagine any real American film exhibitor booking it, nor any responsible American newspaper, radio, or TV station accepting ads for it. Here in Hollywood, where theater man Simon Lazarus, another Fifth Amendment witness, has taken over a second-rate movie house to run Salt of the Earth, the leading metropolitan newspapers already refuse to advertise it. The audacity of the comrades who made Salt of the Earth is without precedent. They even proposed to me that they might advertise their picture in the Catholic press! And there is an exclamation point at the end of that sentence.
Oh, God, the children!
Their relative honesty in identifying themselves in the film's credits is commendable. Beside the sneaky tactics four other comrades recently adopted, I did read about at least one of the Hollywood 10 who, like, used a fake name to keep writing, but it's like the man needed to make a living and he wanted to make a living doing the thing that he had built a career.
That's fair. I don't blame him.
Me neither. They made Stranger on the Prowl in Italy. United Artists publicly released it here with phony credits. The names of these communists, whom Hollywood has fired, were concealed from the public. At least we all know who financed and made Salt of the Earth. Therefore, anyone who pays money to see it is free to conclude that he is subsidizing communist or pro-communist causes. He is also patronizing, in the guise of social documentation, a film that is patently anti-American and, through bias, pro-communist. And that is my last review for this evening.
I'm really interested in that last bit about, like, anti-American is on one end of the spectrum and pro-communist is on the other. Because one of them is, like a culture and a country... And like a, I don't know if I would call American ethnicity, I guess you would. And the other one is a political ideal. So it's like equating being American to a specific political ideal. And it's just, it's, there's a lot of.
I also like how they're the only ones who are biased. He doesn't have any Catholic bias.
Oh, no. No, of course not. Because God is good. He's out here doing the Lord's work.
The Catholic
yeah,
God.
The white Jesus.
But those Protestants really messed up the story of Martin Luther.
Oh, those fucking Protestants. The Catholic-Protestant debate is a whole other fucking thing. I keep thinking of, every time you bring it up, I keep thinking of the bit in Dairy Girls where they go to the little summer camp to, unite the Catholics and the Protestants. And, They're supposed to, like, come up with differences between Catholics and Protestants, and the whole point of the exercise is to be like, we're really all the same. But they end up listing, like, two chalkboards full of, like, minutiae differences between Catholics and Protestants.
I feel like we need to make a statement to wrap this up.
You know what? I think a good... quote to kind of end on from the film that I feel like responds interestingly well to Morris's thoughts is, I think it's been a minute since I've watched the movie, so I'm trying to, I think the scene is, I think it must be in the bar, and they're talking to, like, some of the other miners who, like, some of the other, like, white miners. Oh, like, the guy, the goofy-looking guy with, like, the hat and the big glasses, the white guy, you know who I'm talking about? I forget his name. And he's talking about how, like, you know, you know, we get treated poorly too. We don't get paid well either, you know, because like he's not wrong. Like the whole system is shit and they're all in unsafe, underpaid working conditions. Right. But then Ramon points out like, but, you know, you at least have running water. And so Morris is on this attack of like, not attack, sorry. He thinks he is being attacked. Right. And he's like, we are being pushed down and we're being discriminated against and we're being made fun of by the fact that these kinds of movies are allowed to play everywhere. And in the bar scene, in response to the white miner, Ramon says, so discrimination hurts the Anglos too, but it hurts me more and I'm sick of it.
Mm, that's good.
And I didn't write down a whole lot of exact quotes, but that was one that I was like,
I like
that's
that.
Just fucking, that's right.
I think too, like, I mean, looking at like the very last line of this final Mooring article about he is also patronizing in the guise of social documentation, which actually, like, it's another sentence when where you start parsing it, you're kind of like, does that make any sense? But I also have to say, like, in the guise of social doc, I mean, the movie uses, like, the real people from this town and goes to the town on location. I mean, this is by far more real than most of the studio films being made in this era. So it's not a fair criticism at all. But I think I would also like to bring it back to a beautiful moment from this film and leave it on that note. So the quote that I wrote down that really stood out to me is somebody at some point says, anything worth learning is a hurt.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that, yeah.
Beautiful film, inspiring film, extremely successful despite literally everything that could go wrong in a movie happened to this movie, and we get... But you know what? As I said, anything worth learning is a hurt. So with that, we're your Silver Nitrate Witches. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in. You can find your Silver Nitrate Witches on various online platforms at LJ Valenza and at Belling303. Hopefully we'll have had some theme music going on throughout. So if that's the case, thanks to Fine Motor for the use of their songs Highway Moon and In Event. You can check out more about the band at finemotormusic.com. Thanks for listening. Stay witchy. Keep watching movies.